If Bill Maher wants to keep on talking about Christianity, I will keep on doing shows about it, because whenever he does, it is an absolute crime scene.
He's just crazy enough to do it.
Isn't anybody going to help that poor man?
Today on the show, I'm going to show you a conversation with Bill Maher and actor Alan Ritchson, who is a self-proclaimed Christian and even has a Christian YouTube channel.
You're Christian, right?
And I'm going to show you how playing the middle will always leave you, as Mr. Miyagi said, squish like grape.
Walk middle, sooner or later, get the squish just like grape.
We'll talk about that and more today on Indie Thinker. Welcome to Indie Thinker. My name is Reed Uberman, and today on the show, I'm going to try to do what we do every day, which is to take over the world. No, which is to bridge the gap between faith and reason. Before I jump into that, I want to make sure that you know that this show has some amazing sponsors that you can access down in the description of this podcast. You can find Herbal Alchemy, which is a great all-natural way to kick woke out of your bathroom and out of your kitchen. And then you'll also find that we have a brand new sponsor that can help you refinance your home or help you purchase a brand new home. And in any event, help you secure your family's financial future. We highly encourage you to check out those guys because they're great friends of the show and they can help you a lot. Your money is better spent on these companies that share your values than any other place. But then also want to encourage you to check out the link that's on the screen where you can see our sponsors, but also sign up for our newsletter. That's the place for Indie Thinker Extras, where you can see our brand new full trailer to our documentary, Fatherless, and you can help support that film and support this show. If you believe that eradicating fatherlessness is important, or really just supporting critical thinking is good for society, and you feel like this show has been beneficial in that way to you personally and can be so to others, then we highly encourage you to help support this show with your tax-deductible gifts. One of my children told me the other day one of the principals at his school has no eyebrows, and that it was a scientific experiment that went awry that took his eyebrows away. I found myself highly skeptical simply because that sounds like the kind of conspiracy theories that kids peddled when I was in school, middle school and high school, that there was a scientific experiment that went wrong and it mutated one of our teachers. So, needless to say, as I was driving through Carline today, I was inspecting very carefully the eyebrows of the high school principal. And I cannot tell you assuredly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the conspiracy theory is true. I can only tell you that the conspiracy theory exists. And we're seeing more and more conspiracy theories today, regardless of whether or not they have a lot of merit to them or not. And if there is a conspiracy theory today that Christians have had to battle for a long time and still some fall for, is the idea that all we need to do is be tolerant and accepting and not judgmental and create judgment-free zones, and all of a sudden people will just flock to the church. They will just love that watered-down version of the gospel. First of all, I should mention that there is no real way to create judgment-free zones, and if you did, let's just say that things would be quite hellish. If the interstate became a judgment-free zone, then people would be wrecking into pillars and bridges, which brings us to a different conspiracy theory, I know, but wrecking into bridges and then wrecking into each other and going different speed limits. And if we weren't using judgment every single day of our life in a good way, then this world would truly be a horrible place to live. But thankfully, we all know deep down that those things sound better in theory than they actually do in practice. We all do execute judgments. The question is it good judgment? Is it righteous judgment? Now, in order to do that, we need to be willing to take firm stances on things that are true and good. In society today, we're told a lot of things are right. It's right for me to be able to kill my baby, and it's right for me to be able to tell you that I feel like a woman, or that I don't feel right in my body, and I have this feeling that doesn't jive with all the things that I see in society. Well, that may be right as far as you can tell, but that doesn't mean that it's good or even that it's true. In order to get those things, we have to be willing to have substantive conversations, disagreements, and be willing to let the truth lead us to the ultimate conclusion that we need to find ourselves at. And I say that because If this show is about anything, it's ultimately about being intellectually honest. It doesn't mean that I'm going to be right all the time or that I won't make mistakes. It just simply means that what we have to be willing to do is let the evidence lead us to where it should go. If we're willing to do that, then we will have a better society and we will be better people, because the truth will be doing what it was always meant to do, which is to grind us and sharpen us into the people that God intended us to be. At least that's what I think, and that's what I believe. But maybe you would agree that a society built upon truth is better than a society that is built upon tolerance and acceptance and being non-judgmental. Let the truth guide us to wherever it will. But I do have to tell you, I find it very rare that that kind of intellectual honesty is on the side of the skeptic or the atheist. Very often, they don't care where the evidence leads them as far as Christianity is concerned. They've already made up their mind, and you will see this on full display in a conversation with Alan Richson and Bill Maher on the subject of the Bible. And I'll show you, beyond Bill Maher's kind of wrong take on things, I'll show you how Alan Richson tries to play the patsy and how it doesn't go well for him in the end.
Most Christians, maybe you're one of them, you're a Christian, right?
I am.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Would tell you that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were disciples of Jesus, the people who wrote the Gospels. And they were absolutely not. Did you think they were?
No, I mean, we know that those documents were based off an older document.
They came later.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so first off, just have to go ahead and tell you that this is totally untrue. So what Alan seems to be referring to here, and I think he'll actually mention this later in the conversation, is the theory of the Q document, which is that all these gospel writers had this earlier kind of manuscript and they shared from that and wrote their stories based upon that kind of outline. And now again, nothing has ever been found to confirm that this is true. But we can step back a little bit and just get to the plain facts of what we do know. So what we do know is that Luke was not a disciple of Jesus, and no Christian really thinks that he was. So the gospel writer Luke was making personal interviews, as you can tell throughout his gospel. He's talking to Mary and talking about the way people felt at this time, and he does these kind of weird things that necessitate, and I say weird, but it's more unique. He does these things that necessitate that he's having these personal conversations with people, and these people are telling to him, dictating to him what actually took place. Now, we also know that Matthew and John are indeed disciples of Jesus. There is a large consensus that the Gospel Matthew is written by the disciple Matthew, the tax collector. The reason we can posit this is that all of the material that we have to tell us who the author actually was either comes from an ancient manuscript that actually has his name, the Gospel according to Matthew, on it, or, and I believe that was dated around 300 AD, I believe. And then also, even earlier than that, in the early second century, we have Irenaeus doing two things for us, dating the Gospel of Matthew, potentially, and then also telling us that it was Matthew, the tax collector, who wrote it. Furthermore, there's internal evidence in the book of Matthew that shows that Matthew was indeed the tax collector who wrote this gospel. And that is that there are more financial parables and stories used in Matthew than any of the other Gospels. It is the most Jewish of all the Gospels, and therefore we can posit pretty safely that all the evidence pushes us toward what is called Matthean authorship, that Matthew did indeed write this and Matthew was one of the disciples. Now John, it is posited, was also one of the disciples. It is considered by most scholars that John was written later, but nonetheless written by one of his disciples. And in fact, you can see toward the end of the book, where John will essentially tell us this. This is the disciple who is testifying about these things and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true. So right there we get that John most likely has somebody writing the gospel for him, but he is dictating it to this person who is writing it. And so in John, we have John saying, I wrote these things, I'm that disciple. So, of course, we think it was that disciple. Now, Mark, on the other hand, is not a disciple of Jesus, and no one should think he is. But Mark was around, we believe, during the time of the disciples. And in antiquity, we hear that Mark was dictated, had this gospel dictated to him by Peter. So Peter essentially is giving the story, Mark is writing it down, and then delivering it for all of us. So Every single gospel is either directly related to a disciple or written from a disciple. There is no evidence to the contrary here that is anything other than theoretical. So fine, talk about it all you want, but you cannot definitively say what Bill Maher just said. This comes from the fact that Bill doesn't actually know what he's talking about. And in fact, if you really want to be honest and go beyond scholarly consensus, you can see these things for yourself. You can see where Irenaeus in the second century is saying that Matthew wrote this gospel. I mean, that's pretty freaking early. And in the early second century, so we're talking the early 100s and could potentially even be earlier than that. Anyway, I'll just say this, that if you don't know what you're talking about, you probably shouldn't be that confident about it. And Bill Maher continues to do that.
Jesus died in 33. And the first gospel, Mark, the gospel of Mark, is 70.
Right.
They were not contemporaries of it. They all had similar names. They're just,
right.
You know, there were, so it is a little confusing.
Right.
Again, not true. These people were contemporaries of Jesus. This kind of really isn't refutable. The question is can you trust them? Okay, fine, that's a conversation that we can have. But the idea that these people were not contemporaries of Jesus, they weren't even around, they were playing phone tag, they just got all these secondhand stories and then they wrote these down, this is just not true.
But I've talked to people who are real, you know, serious Christians and scholars and all this stuff, and they, oh no, I don't think that's, I'm like, trust me, every scholar.
Trust Bill.
Understands this. It's not an insult either. It's just the fact.
I mean, the big.
They don't know their own religion. They haven't read the Bible.
I do want to say something about this. This is where Bill actually has a point. The vast majority of believers, not scholars, as he mentioned, but the vast majority of believers don't know their own religion. They wouldn't know how they can defend Matthean authorship or Johannine authorship. And I know, like, Matthew, John is what that means. But you don't have to go to Bible college to learn Matthean authorship and Johannine authorship as terms. All you have to do is actually just do the research yourself. I highly encourage you, if you're a Christian, to look at how the Bible was formed. A lot of Christians, I think, are deeply concerned that if they start doing this research, it will somehow injure your faith. And the exact opposite is true. If you start researching this stuff, you'll actually find that the evidence for the Bible is incredibly overwhelming. So just take some time to carefully weed through the information, because you're going to find a bunch of people with axes to grind and agendas, you know, so read with a discerning eye, but get into the original source material. Look at Irenaeus, look at Eusebius, and look at these guys and see what they have to say. And I promise you, it'll strengthen your faith.
We talk about the Bible a lot. It's a long book. It's boring.
But the problem that I have with most Christians today, and I talk about this openly a lot, is that it misses the point. I mean, you can get hung up in the weeds about document Q or whatever you want to talk about with where this stuff comes from. But the point is very simple. You've got somebody who claims to be the Messiah pointing the way towards a whole radically different new way to love. And that's through self-sacrificial care of your neighbor.
Very true.
And when you talk about just that, it's a really beautiful thing that a lot of other religions don't talk about, because you're talking about religions that talk about the way to salvation is through doing it over and over and over again and living a million lives, or finding your own self-elevation, you know, through meditation or contemplation. But this is talking about admitting that we are flawed and admitting that there's a path towards joy that comes through self-service.
Okay, so also in talking to that, you absolutely avoid some of the essential claims of Christianity. So just telling people that Christianity is behavior modification, a way to self-sacrifice and serve others, is doing nothing other than what, like, Gandhi said Christianity was. That is to, in other words, reduce Christianity down to its most agreeable form, so that you don't face backlash or so that you don't face criticism for standing up for the authentic faith. In other words, what I'm trying to tell you is that I think what Alan Richin just laid out is a recipe for Christianity to try to avoid controversy that will come when you actually stand up for biblical truth. And the problem with taking this middle ground position is that you are not loving people by avoiding those conflicts. If you really care about people, you will tell them the truth. And this is a truth that can absolutely fundamentally shape the lives of individuals. And so it is the most compassionate thing to do, to actually stand up for the faith rather than to just merely take a backup position that you think is unoffensive to people. I mean, Jesus really talks about this, and this is something I want to encourage all of you guys to just realize and to try to grapple with, is that the gospel is offensive. It's going to be. It's polarizing. It pushes us to make and take positions that the world is going to hate. I mean, they didn't crucify Jesus because he was so, you know, freaking loving at the end of the day. They crucified the man because he stood up for controversial truths that they just didn't like at the time. Jesus was always countercultural. He was always revolutionary, not as a revolutionary, but revolutionary in his thinking, because he brought to us a heavenly kind of thinking that flies in the face of all the thinking of this world. And to push that away is to take away the power of who Jesus is and the power of the gospel to change people's lives. So therefore, I don't think it's compassionate at all.
The biography of Jesus is anything but unique. In fact, it's stolen. The number of gods who came before him who were born on December 25th, really, had disciples, were crucified or something on a tree, and then came back to life.
Even Genesis, like even the very first story in Genesis, the second line, talking about the spirit hovered over the water, this chaos waters, that myth was absconded from early Eastern.
The flood.
But the thing that makes it different is there's a...
Okay. Another point of clarification here. Is it at least possible that there is one God who created these stories and then people absconded that myth and then started twisting and perverting these things? I mean, it's surely worth debating whether or not the story of Genesis predates any of the kind of archaic myths that we have today. And of course, the secular skeptic and the scholar is going to say, no, the book of Genesis all robs, blah, 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 blah. But they don't know that definitively. Let's just be real about the vast majority of history. It is a guessing game, and we have to piece together the evidence. But even if you push all of that aside, the reality is that what Bill and what Alan is saying here is just so not true. This is just such an easy thing to say that, well, you know, Christianity is just stealing from the Greeks and it's stealing from this, and blah, 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 and that none of these things are original. That is only true on a superficial level. Ravi Zacharias said this. He said that all the major religions of the world are basically the same except for the creation of man, their look at sin, their view of God, their view of salvation, their view of the afterlife. I mean, like, all of these things are fundamentally different. So religions of the world, at least in the present situation, and in the past too, were superficially the same, but fundamentally different if you go beyond the superficial. But the vast majority of people just want to see a similarity and then chalk that up to abstraction rather than to say, well, sure, there's a reason for those potential similarities, but let's talk about the ways in which they are fundamentally different, and then let's weigh those things.
Twist on every one of them that orients us towards, I think, a seed of truth that is worth inspecting and holding on to. That, you know, for example, the real twist in the first myth, in the creation myth in Genesis, is quite simply that those chaos waters that everybody knew, and the serpent being, you know, the snaky monster being the mythological villain, was well known to people at that time, but never had there been an acknowledgement that it was God who created that thing, and that he thought that thing was good, and that we're to coexist with this world where things like monsters exist and humans exist, and there's a way to do that in a way that still breeds peace. That had never been done before.
Well, I was going to say, the biography of Jesus, not original, but the message was revolutionary. Nobody had really ever been down the meek shall inherit the earth road. There were so many at the time that Jesus was around. If he lived, that is still an open question. He could not have.
Okay, it's not really an open question. The vast majority of people who are out there, even skeptical scholars, will tell you that Jesus existed and was a historical figure. That's more dismissiveness on the part of Marr, not wanting to really grapple with, if Jesus was real, then what can we know about him, and should we go to the Bible? Obviously, the only really source that we have of who he was and what he said while he was here on this earth. Just to prove this, let me take you to Bart Ehrman, who is no Christian, by the way, a fully skeptical scholar who has spoken about the existence of Jesus and what people actually believe about this in the Academy, who know a little bit more of what they're talking about. Check it out.
I know in the crowds you all run around with, it's commonly thought that Jesus did not exist. Let me tell you, once you get outside of your conclave, there's nobody who, I mean, this is not even an issue for scholars of antiquity.
So there you have it. Yes, I am happy to use a skeptical scholar when they benefit my point, and then mock them all the other times. In all honesty, the reality of who Jesus was, how he taught, what he taught, the life he lived, the truths of Christian scripture are deeply, deeply unique when you actually think about them. This is the way C.S. Lewis said it. He said, Christianity is the greatest myth. Of course, there are similarities in the myths of the world, the great myths of antiquity. However, there is one big difference between Christianity and the other myths of the world. And the difference is that Christianity is true. See, if all of these things are just great stories, fine. But Christianity is based upon a set of historical data that can be processed and thought about. And to just dismiss that is absolutely to miss the point altogether. And Alan Richson doesn't do any favors to any of us as fellow Christians or to Bill Maher by avoiding that stuff. Let me give you just one basic fact. Every single archaeological find that has to do with the Bible has only affirmed scripture and never contradicted it. That's just one of the many things that I can say. Maybe we should take the Bible a little bit more seriously and see what it really has to say to each and every one of us. Beyond that, I'll just argue this final point, which brings us kind of full circle to the whole reason I wanted to do this video, which is just simply this. I think we've had enough of the kind of Christianity that we see from Alan Richson. You know, for such a big and buff and, talented guy, it's interesting that we don't get a little bit more firm hand when it comes to Christian truth from him. We get this kind of pandering, but let's be real about this. This is the kind of Christianity that we've been preaching in our churches for far too long. The kind of therapeutic deism that says, you know, God will do you good. Just follow him and see how much he will serve you and love you, and it'll give you goosebumps at the end of the day. But that doesn't change people's lives. If you are confronted with a trans person, you owe them the truth of saying, biology is a reality. You were created by God like you were for a reason, and you can't change that. And a surgeon's knife isn't going to make that any different. It's not going to change that truth. It's not going to alleviate the pain that you have right now. The only thing that will is knowing who you are when you go to the one who created you. See, this is the kind of conversation that we can have without being jerks and without being meanies and without being quote-unquote Bible thumpers. But the vast majority of what we hear, and we've internalized this kind of oppression, as they say on the left, is that Christians are just too intolerant and therefore nobody wants to believe. No, people don't want to believe in things they do not know. And that's why I think people like Alan Richson aren't standing up for the truth, because they just don't know it. And therefore, you can't convince a skeptic of something that you yourself don't know. So again, I ask not for weak Christianity, but for bold Christianity with a head and a heart and a chest. And I ask for Christianity that is well informed, because the more informed you are, the bigger a difference you can make. And then once you know what you're talking about, stand for it. And I promise you, it'll make a difference. Do it on social media, do it wherever you can, but do it. I know courage is not common, but it should be among Christians. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for watching. If the show has been beneficial to you, don't forget to comment down below. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and go with God.